Guys.
Seated, please. Court is ready to hear argument in 060904, Guitar Holdings Company versus Hudspeth County Underground Water Conservation District Number 1.
Please the court. Mr. Johnson will present argument for the petitioner. The petitioner has reserved 7 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. This case presents the question of whether a Chapter 36 groundwater district can, under the limited authority granted under Chapter 36 to preserve historic use.
What's the definition of use? How do we use that term?
In this case,
what the definition of is?
Use is used throughout Chapter 36 in the context of both the type and the amount of use. So I think the answer is it addresses the question of type, character of use. So use means, to what use do you put the water?
What about historical use?
And historic use, I think, has the specific definition of preserving the status quo. The legislature intended in 36116B to give these groundwater districts that had this new extensive regulatory authority the power to exempt, if you will, existing or historic use from the application of these new regulations.
Well, how does historic use play into Senate Bill 2 when you're contemplating a different type of use and transporting the water out of the district?
Clearly, what the legislature intended was that when you put a use to a new use, you would have to comply with the new regulations of the groundwater district. In fact, they made that abundantly clear, I think, in 36113E, where they say, in essence, recognizing that groundwater districts statewide would be adopting new rules with new regulatory powers that were granted in Senate Bill 2, recognize that there would be a special class, if you will, of protected historic use that would then, if it chose to change its use or change the character of the use of the protected use, would be subject to the same rules as any other user in the district would have to comply with.
How long do these transfer permits last?
The transfer permits are issued for a 3-year term pending construction of the facilities and then are good for a 30-year term.
Okay, so what if an irrigator decided to transfer a portion of the water? Could they then decide 2 years later that they need it for irrigation purposes and get it back?
Under the district's rules, they have authorized the irrigator to make a determination annually as to whether or not they would transfer their water under the authorization of their transfer permit.
So if your scheme were to carry the day, if the water was not transferred, if the water was not used in the district to irrigate, then what would happen? How would it be allocated?
If it were put to a new use, yeah, just like any other landowner in the district, that would be subject to the district's rules requiring the obtaining of an operating permit, so which is a virtually useless permit for purposes of commercial development of the water or transfer.
So if an irrigator wanted to transfer out, you would require them to get an operating permit to do that?
A new use under the statute and therefore would be required to comply with the district's rules that apply to all new users.
And if that happened, then isn't an irrigator, to keep from giving up the rights that they already have, going to just continue to use it for irrigation purposes?
And that's exactly what the legislature intended, was to authorize those users that had made an investment, that had undertaken an activity prior to the overlay of this regulation, to be allowed to continue to do that. That was the intent of the legislature in 36113 and in 36116. So, yes, they are confined to that use, which is protected in this special category, because it is not subject to the overlay of the otherwise regulatory scheme adopted by the district. So really, what the legislature attempted to do in Senate Bill 1 and Senate Bill 2 And finally, in Senate Bill 3, was empower groundwater districts to, for the first time, legitimately manage and protect the groundwater resources of the state. But the legislature recognized that there was a lot of groundwater use that predated the empowerment of these groundwater districts. So it made special provision for the protection of only that historic use. And they used the word preserve, which I think is extremely instructive in terms of what the legislature intended. Preserve means to maintain the status quo.
You say in your briefs several times that there was never transfer out of the district.
That is correct.
That seems surprising. So that only occurred after the transfer permits were put in place.
Exactly correct. The the local use had been for irrigation purposes in Dell City, which is quite some distance from the market that that this water would be put to. So, yes, the use was all local. There had never been a transfer of this water outside of the district.
Well, in fact, transfer outside the district was prohibited. Isn't that right, under the old rules?
Your Honor, you're correct. In Senate Bill 1, there was a provision added to Chapter 36 that gave groundwater districts the power to prohibit exports, and this district did have rules that would prohibit exports. That was changed in Senate Bill 2 in 2001, and specifically, the groundwater districts were prohibited from prohibiting exports, but they were given some power to regulate exports and transfers.
One question of clarification. The district says that, and they quote trial counsel for Guitar Holding, that you told the trial court that we are not challenging constitutionality of Chapter 36. Is that correct then, and is it correct now?
It is correct then, and it is correct now. And I think it's important to recognize what this case is not about. This case is not challenging the authority of the legislature to adopt the provisions of Chapter 36 in any way, shape, or form. Nor does this case impugn the authority of a district to protect historic use, to preserve and protect historic use. This case is not about undoing the groundwater regulatory framework that the legislature has provided in Senate Bill 1, Senate Bill 2, and Senate Bill 3. In fact, it is the exact opposite. This case represents an opportunity for the court to advise groundwater districts of the extent of the authority, but the limits on that authority, and in this case, the specific limit on the authority to protect or preserve historic use. In the absence of that limitation, the preservation or protection of historic use, which was intended to grandfather or exempt from regulation these pre-existing uses before the those uses would then be the predominant or perhaps only use in the district, which would be the exact opposite of what the legislature intended. What the legislature intended was to give all landowners equal access to the water for new uses, but to preserve this special category of historic use.
Well, it appears to me that the way the scheme is set up now, it doesn't give all landowners equal access to the water. It actually seems to discriminate against ranch owners or big property owners.
It does, and that's why we are here before the court. These rules discriminate against the ranchers who have conserved their water.
Well, then I think you confused me where you said you're not challenging the constitutionality of that, because if you apply a rational basis test, and perhaps it's what the municipality did is, the district did is rational in that it's trying to adhere to what the statute says.
What we are challenging constitutionally is the exercise of the authority, the limited authority granted by Chapter 36 by this particular district. We do not.
Your response to the chief was that you're not challenging the constitutionality of any
Chapter
provision.
36. Okay. What violates the Equal Protection Clause is the specific provisions allowing the conversion of this preserved historic use to the new use of transfer when every other new user is treated differently. So that's the distinction. This is not a challenge to Chapter 36 powers. This is not a challenge to Groundwater District's authority to protect and preserve historic use in a category different from all new users that are subject now to the regulatory
framework.
What
you're saying is a farmer could decide today, if they get this transfer permit, to stop all farming on the property and transfer water out of the district, or at least 70% under the permit, whereas a rancher, there's no way that they'd be able to do that under the district's
regulatory scheme.
That is exactly correct, and it I think points out the fallacy of the approach. There is no preservation of the historic use in that scenario. In fact, quite the contrary. The use is converted to an entirely new use. And obviously, in this circumstance in particular, there is a limited number of landowners that benefit from the preservation of that historic use. And the way these rules operate, that in essence represents an adjudication of that right for these farmers to make whatever use perpetually of the limited amount of water that the district has found is available within this aquifer, which is what
is it clear in the Senate Bill 2 that one thing the legislature is trying to achieve is unfettered transfer of water out of locations where it can be pumped?
Clearly, the legislature had a market in mind as it structured the provisions of Senate Bill 2, and it intended to limit groundwater districts' ability to treat transfers for use outside the district differently than uses inside the district.
So the irrigators argue in the brief that if they have to choose between giving up rights to water to get transfer rights or holding what they have, they'll just hold what they have and continue to raise produce.
And that would be appropriate and sanctioned by Chapter 36. That is exactly what the outcome would be.
But that would defeat the legislative intent that water be transferred out, or at least that it be freer to do.
There's a balance to be struck between preserving the historic use and overlaying regulation on the groundwater district. And I think clearly the legislature did not want groundwater districts to be in a position where there was overuse or there was a failure of that protection. So perhaps there would be a limit on the ability of these farmers to market their right, but it would not interfere with the operation of a market in any way other than limiting the available water as the district had found was available for new use or transfer.
I suppose it might not be all or nothing. It might be that a farmer would have to decide which was more remunerative, transferring water, or at least some water, or retaining it for irrigation, or it would depend on how desperate El Paso was and what the price of cantaloupes was.
And I think the amicus brief of the Farm Bureau points out that that's exactly the case, that they will have a market position because they are a preserved use, and the way these rules operate, that'll have value in the context of the market. But practically speaking, the preservation that is intended by the legislature is just for that use, not a conversion to an entirely new use.
So, under your interpretation, if the aquifer is 3580 or below, then no water gets transferred out of the district.
That is what the rules provide. That's correct. And as a practical matter, as the record reflects, that does not happen.
But otherwise, if the irrigators are able to transfer out, they're guaranteed to transfer out 3,000 acre feet?
3 acre feet per irrigated acre is the base.
Irrespective of the level of aquifer.
Exactly correct. So they have a assured, permanent, guaranteed right, which has value in a marketplace. So it creates a distinct difference between the parties.
Further
time
questions?
Is up.
Thank you, Counselor. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Hicks will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court. As Justice Medina, I think, noted, subtly or not, notwithstanding what Guitar has said, what they're doing here is really challenging the structure that's set up in Chapter 36 by the legislature. This case really, when you look behind what I consider to be an impenetrable statutory argument, when you look behind it, this case really asked the court whether it meant what it said in 1999.
Let me just ask you a quick question.
Sure.
To follow up on my last question. Under Guitar's interpretation, if the aquifer is 3580 or below, no water goes out of the district. Under your interpretation, water does go out of the district because the irrigators are given a right to transfer it if the aquifer is at a lower level, and how does that preserve the aquifer, as is the intent of the Water Code?
Well, Our interpretation, I believe, is the correct one. It's the right to produce is the first step in export. I mean, it's just physics or chemistry or something. It's reality. You have to produce the water before you can send it out. You can't send it out until you produce the water. And our rules follow I'm coming around to the direct answer to your question. Our rules follow Chapter 36 precisely in terms of the permission it gave us that we could recognize historic use. We did that. This is in the desert. We have to have some basis for allocating this water. So we said if you produced water, if you pumped it up and used it, it doesn't matter how. It just so happens here it's mainly agricultural irrigation. If you used it during that period, you get a permit to produce it in the future, essentially keyed to what you'd used before, 4 acre-feet per acre that you used. Then the legislature has told us we cannot stop people that have a right to produce from exporting. I'm sure there are people in this community that would like to have done that, but we couldn't do it. The legislature said in Section 122 in 2001 in Senate Bill 2, you cannot keep people from exporting. You can't have a rule that prohibits that. So once we tell people they can produce, and we have our rules set up to try to conserve and preserve the aquifer, we still have to let them export. We can't say, sorry, we want to keep that water here.
Well,
but we have
another provision that's intended to treat new users the same.
That, you're talking about 113E. We treat new users the same, but to even get over to 113E, you have to start off at 122C. And I want to read that key provision to you because it's essential to understand why it is Guitar that's arguing for a rule that violates 122C, not us. We're following it. 122C specifically says that, except as 113E permits, okay, we, the district, or any district, have to treat exporters exactly the same as we treat in-district users. We cannot treat them differently. And so we have said, look, if you are an in-district user, if you're an in-district user that was an irrigator, which is nearly everybody out there, you essentially use up, consume. It's called consumptive use in the parlance of water law. You essentially use up 70% of the water that you pump out when you're irrigating crops. It evaporates, transpires through the plants and so on. You use 70%. 30% of it returns to the aquifer, which is helpful. You use 70% of it up. And now under 122C, to treat exporters the same as we treat in-district users, we say you have to produce. That's natural. If you want an export permit, you can export 70% of what you can produce, which is equivalent to the consumption that you'd be engaging in if you produced it and used it inside the district. You can send 70% out.
I understand
okay?
the rules. I understand the rules. I do. But this does sort of create a franchise for prior users to use water in a different way.
That's what the legislature told us to do.
And why? What purpose is served by allowing that result?
Because the legislature wanted to balance and required the districts to balance the idea of conserving the aquifer, the resource our board is charged with protecting, to balance that with the fact that this is a scarce resource and there are huge demands on it all over the state. El Paso, as an example, would like access, or at one point would have liked access to this water. Nobody knows quite what the situation is now. And so the legislature said to the districts, you have to balance. You have to conserve. That's a mandate we have. And another mandate we have is you have to let people export if they want to. And so those are the two key mandates we had. And then within that, the legislature said, you don't have to, but you may recognize historic use. And historic use is an amount, not a purpose of use, a kind of use. 36116B and 36.001 subsections 9 and 29, I think, make that clear.
What's the purpose for recognizing historic use?
The purpose for recognizing historic use is, first, we are in, this is, as I keep saying, this is the desert. There's not a lot of water to go around. You have to have some basis for allocating. Western water law for 150 years has recognized this concept. And this court recognized it in the Edwards Aquifer Authority case, the Barshop case. It imported that doctrine into the groundwater law. And the purpose of recognizing historic use is those are the people that, in essence, invested in the community, that invested to produce the water. And
in the community?
Yes, and they did historically.
But would you agree that the historical use doctrine was sort of to keep water in the district and not keep people from who've been using it for crops to be divested of that water? Nobody really anticipated the transfer of water out of a district.
I don't think that's so. In its origins way back when, I don't mean in Texas and in Chapter 36, but in its origins way back when in Western water law, that may have been an aspect of it, but people have always understood that water moves. It moves to money a lot of times. And it's just the issue that Justice Heck was talking about. Is it more valuable, or is it more return on cantaloupes, or selling water to El Paso? And so it was simultaneous in Chapter 36, pretty much. Well, 1997 was Senate Bill 1, 2001 was Senate Bill 2. Senate Bill 2 is when the legislature said, essentially, I'm sorry, I'm back up. In 1997, the legislature said you get to recognize historic use. If people have been using water, you have some test to determine how much they've used before. Then, as things developed a little bit, I think the legislature began to sense, well, some of these districts might want to keep the water inside the district. We want to free the market up to some degree. We have a need in the urban areas for water. Some of these agricultural areas might think it's better to send the water out. And we want that to be able to happen. We don't require it to happen. We want to allow it to happen. And we're mandating in 2001, they came in and said, okay, historic use, you've been recognizing it, but you, the districts, if it's historic use, whatever basis you have for allocating, you cannot stop people from exporting it. So it came down at the same, essentially the same time. It's the same package of the legislation.
To me that the petitioner's case does not impinge on that. It's not whether water's going out of the district or how much so that conservation is affected, but who's going to get to ship it.
It directly impinges on it. First, it directly impinges on 122C. Because if let's accept for the moment Guitar's argument that essentially it doesn't matter what your production rights are, if you want to export, you have to come back into a new pool and get in line again with everybody, okay? Well, I can't remember. I think it was Justice O'Neill was saying, well, who's going to do that? If they're an irrigator, they lose their place. They lose their preference. And it's a preference. There's no question it's a preference. It's a preference that we're permitted to put in place by the legislature. But they lose their preference, which means it was Justice Heck that was raising this.
You give some recognition to it, but you're not bound by it. That's the troubling thing.
We were not required to recognize historic use. We were permitted to.
The troubling thing about it is basically in the case the transfer was not a historic use, and so it's sort of everybody's on a new footing.
It's the use is not a kind of use.
Well, that's what we're here to decide.
Isn't the only thing, but it's one thing, and it clearly is not a kind of use. If you look at the way the definitions are set up, it can't possibly be a kind of use. If you look at section...
But doesn't historical use just sort of connote
The amount. It's the amount used. It so happened that because this is an agricultural area and because the wells were not metered historically, we had to find a basis for determining how much people used. And a lot of districts used different measures of that. We used an objective, technically verifiable thing that said how much did you irrigate to produce a crop during a certain time frame. But that wasn't because it was agricultural. It was because it was a good measure in this community. But if you look at 36.0019, you can see that there is a clear distinction between use as an amount and the purpose of the use. It talks about use for a beneficial purpose, and then it defines what the purposes are, which are agriculture, municipal, and so on, a whole host of things, anything that's useful to society. But it distinguishes use from purpose. If you look at the provision that the legislature in Senate Bill 2 repealed with respect to whether a district, when it's evaluating an application to move water out of the district, that said the district no longer can look at the purpose of that use. We can't look at the purpose of it because they repealed the provision. And that provision said it was the old 36.122D3, repealed in 2001. And it used to tell us we can look at the amount and purposes of use. Again, the distinction is made between amount and purposes. In 36.00129, which was added in 2005, they specifically talk about use as an amount. It only makes sense if you talk about it as an amount, not the kind of use.
But this idea of, you know, all of this is private property, and you're looking at land. Justice Heck and I can, there's a boundary between us. The land looks exactly the same. He's an irrigator, and I'm a rancher. And the water is not remaining in the district. He's selling it to El Paso or to New Mexico, and I can't. That seems to me to be some violation of, if not the precise terms of equal protection law, just seems rather unfair.
It's only unfair if the ability to produce is unfair. If the rules for production are unfair or illegal.
Well, but that's putting the cart before the horse. You can't get the water out under your scheme, so they can't produce.
It seems like production is based on the choices that you're confronted with. And you say, look, you can raise cattle or you can raise cantaloupes. Well, I think cantaloupes would be better. The chief thinks cattle would be better. So
right.
He doesn't need as much water. I need more.
That's right.
But in a sense, he's conserving water by not using it anymore.
And the legislature could change Chapter 36 and say that. It has not said that. You cannot follow Guitar's argument through the statutory brambles and get where they're talking about.
The problem is, okay, let's say I'm not trying to transfer, but I'm trying to maintain or get an operating permit. And that depends on the level of the aquifer, which for the foreseeable future is not going to let me really profitably use that water. And isn't there something wrong with that as well? Whereas he gets a guaranteed amount.
There's only something wrong with it if there's something wrong with the very concept of being able to protect historic use. That's the only way there's something wrong with that.
Unless we interpret historic use to mean type of use.
But then you would be ignoring what the statute says. You don't go there. If you interpret it that way, you are forcing this district, and you'll force others, to treat in-district users differently than exporters. You'll force us to. And if we had done that, let's say we had passed the rule that our rule had done what Guitar said the rule should be, all of the irrigators would have, the people that had production permits, the validation permits, everyone that had a historic use would be suing us saying, wait a second, you can't treat people differently for purposes of export than you treat them for purposes of production. And you are treating us differently because we had a historic use that was recognized. That amount ended up determining how much we could pump, and now you're telling us, sorry, forget about that when you want to export, which would be a backdoor way for us to squelch export.
But it all begs the question, because if it's a new use, all you're asking them to do is go apply for an operational
but
permit.
It's not a new use because the use is not talking about the kind of use. You cannot find in the statute any basis for concluding that.
Water has never been transferred out of the district.
You don't know. I mean, it's likely going to be used for municipal purposes in this situation, but it isn't necessarily true. There hasn't been exports, so nobody knows. Somebody can export it.
That's my question, though. If there have not been exports, why is not export a new use?
Export is not a use. Export is where you are moving the water to. It doesn't tell you how you're using it.
I haven't studied the legislative history yet, but it seems to me that the senators and the people across the street were concerned or about the marketability of the water and giving everybody an opportunity to have some economic gain there. And the scheme that you have set up, or that is set up here, seems to me that you have a lot of discretion here, and the discretion burdens the big landowners.
It does not burden them. You have to understand, Your Honor, we are mandated to permit export.
Right.
We are mandated to conserve the aquifer. Those are two mandates that, as Justice O'Neill has highlighted, can be in some tension. But we are permitted to recognize historic use. That is the legislative permission, and it's dictated that if we do that, if we permit it, we then can't turn around and say, ah, but for export we're doing it differently. And you mentioned the legislative history. In the Senate interim report, before the 2000 Senate interim committee report, on page 72, they specifically explain, groundwater produced for use outside of a district's boundaries should be managed, regulated, or limited based on the same factors used to manage, regulate, or limit in-district use. This goes to your question. Including the number of and procedures associated with district permit application requirements. In other words, we were told you have to treat them the same. And we have a safe harbor in the way we've set it up by linking them. That is, we treat them identically. We don't treat them any differently. You have to produce. You only get to effectively consume by sending it out or using it in the district 70% of the water. And you, if you had historic use recognized, you get it recognized in effect when you send it, if you want to send it out. It's just no basis at all for saying that use means type of use, and export is not a use. It's a movement of the water, no different than pumping it out of the ground.
You mentioned 0019 and 00129.
Yes.
To show that use means amount,
yes,
not type. You rattled off some other citations earlier, Justice O'Neill, to bolster that, but what else do you have?
36.016B, which talks about recognizing historic use, not uses, not kinds of uses, but what would you actually use, the physical use of it, which you took it out, pumped it, put it on the ground, or whatever you did. That's one. 36.1071 directs us to develop a management plan, which has to be approved by the Water Development Board and so on. And then it directs us in subsection F of that provision to have our rules be consistent with our management plan. Well, our management plan is about sustainability of the aquifer in amount. It's not about kinds of use. It's about amount. 63,000 acre feet a year is the amount it can handle being drawn out of it and still say sustained. So it's all linked. And if we have permission to do this, if going otherwise would effectively be putting Texas groundwater law at odds with the history of Western water law.
Let me ask you this question, and I didn't see it from the briefing or the amicus briefs. How many groundwater districts in Texas have this sort of regulatory scheme?
And by this sort, do you mean recognizing historic use?
Well, no, the two different permits and the transfer out application. Is this pretty typical?
Put it this way. I don't know if it's typical. And some are, like east of here, are in much more water-rich areas. The Ogallala, I don't know how they've set things up there. There's more water more widely available there. About a third to a half recognize historic use. They all do it different ways.
That's the answer. They all do it different ways.
They all do it different ways. We're further along in our permitting than most of them. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Thank you.
Justice O'Neill, let me answer your question first. There are no other groundwater districts in the state of Texas that have similar provisions that allow the complete conversion of a historic use preserved under the right to protect historic use new use for transfer.
Let me ask it this way. Are there any other transfer rules that tie transferability to differentiation between permits?
No, there are not. There are, as Council mentioned, there are groundwater districts that have chosen to preserve or protect historic use with a regulatory framework different than the regulatory framework applicable to all other new users.
If we adopt your rule, the farmers just keep irrigating.
they have protection for that which they have invested. They have been.
If we adopt your rule, they would have to keep irrigating because if they try to sell, they lose everything.
They would have to keep irrigating in order to preserve and protect their historic use under those rules.
And if,
but they would be on the same footing as every other landowner in the context of
to sell to El Paso or whoever. They would apply again. They would get a much smaller amount. And if we wanted El Paso still wanted to buy, how could the market wire around that?
The short answer to how the market would wire around that is that El Paso would pay those farmers not to farm, so that that water would then be available for the district to allocate among all the landowners. That's the short answer. So they would have additional value by virtue of that preservation of their historic.
But you have to pay all of them.
Or the number you needed to free up the sufficient amount of water to acquire sufficient quantities to move it to El Paso. But, yes, they're the market would still operate. It would just operate fairly. Everyone could participate. And that gives them the protection that the legislature intended, which
so
is...
So that at some point, if transfer out became more lucrative, they would give up the irrigation purpose and apply to the same pool for an operational permit as everyone else.
Absolutely. That's what the legislature had in mind. And by the way, council misreads 122 Section Q. What that section says is the district can't adopt a rule that says if you want to export, you only get 1 acre foot, but if you want to use it in district, you get 2 or 3 acre feet. That's what that provision is about. They cannot make a distinction in terms of a new application that walks in based on where the water is going to go. That's what that section relates to. Now, I think it's important to go back to what this case is not about. First of all, let me mention Cipriano as well. In Cipriano, where this court considered the rule of capture and its implications, the court recognized clearly that there was a property right associated with the rule of capture. And in fact, even in the concurring opinion recommending a consideration of the restatement of torts, there's an acknowledgement that all landowners share in the resource. In fact, the whole purpose of the restatement of tort provision is to acknowledge that shared resource. So such a scheme as created by this district would never be countenanced under a reasonable use rule, American rule, correlative rights rule. You pick the rule. Each of those acknowledges that it's a shared resource. In this case, the legislature has amended, if you will, the rule of capture to now say, districts, we're going to give you the power to prevent the kind of Cipriano fact situation that existed. We're going to give you the power to preserve and protect historic use.
And they envision that this would be a local decision.
Indeed, the decisions with regard to how to use these management tools that were being given were left to the local districts because, frankly, there are differences among the groundwater districts' conditions throughout the state.
Well, and I suppose differences in constituencies and differences in how the boards are chosen and what the priorities are.
And goals and what they're to accomplish, indeed. But what the legislature made abundantly clear was that they were trying to overlay a regulatory scheme on a property right. 36102 basically says the legislature acknowledges that we are regulating a property right here, and we want you to read this, as they said, as recognizing those property rights.
And since the legislature went through all that trouble to give this authority to a local government, so there'd be less government, why shouldn't we leave it to the discretion of the local parties involved?
Because this district has exceeded the authority that the legislature granted to Chapter 36 districts and has done so in a way that is discriminatory to landowners that have conserved their water rights. In essence, provided a scheme where a limited number of landowners benefit from the shared resource.
Well, that calls us to look at every other district's scheme to determine whether or not it's done fair and just.
Well, there is a remedy for anyone that is disadvantaged by unfair, unjust, partial, or discriminatory rules of a groundwater district. I would suggest that this is a unique circumstance within this district and is not reflective of what other groundwater districts.
How many other suits are there that you're aware of against districts in the way they manage or regulate water?
I am not aware. There are some. There are some both procedural and substantive with regard to rules that have been adopted. Not many. None have made. There are a number of cases arising out of the implementation of the Edwards Aquifer Authority legislation, which predates this. But as far as other groundwater districts, there are very, very few.
The briefs identify
five permits. Is that still the status of things?
Yes.
The four irrigators and your client?
Yes.
And do we? There's a big dispute about whether the aquifer's gotten over 3,580 feet in elevation. Do we know?
I do not know today. It would be unlikely to be above 3,580.
Some hope that if you keep the consumption down, it might get there. But
to date, last time I checked, it did not reach
that
level.
Well, these numbers were before last summer's rain, I suppose, right? And that didn't have.
So I do not have information based on last summer's rains, but there has been also a lot of irrigation use in the district.
Can you explain to me how the transfer rules, not the production rules, but the transfer rules discriminate among water users in the district?
The transfer rules discriminate by linking the amount you can transfer to the underlying permit that the applicant has. So, in essence, they incorporate the limits of the operating permit, the absolute prohibition on use of water above 3580, into the new users, like the Guitar family would be, in the event they chose to transfer.
How are the board members chosen here?
I see my time is...
So I ask the question.
I'm sorry, the question?
How are the board members chosen?
They are elected, and keep in mind, in this district, you're talking about a very small population centered around the irrigation community in Dell City. All the board members are farmers.
Well, seems like they have a lock. But my idea was perhaps they should... You can change this by the election of the board members.
It's difficult to do.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The cause is submitted, and the court will take a brief recess.
All rise.